June 10th, 2025, regular meeting of the San Francisco County Transportation Authority Board. I am Commissioner Myrna Melgar, Chair of the Board. Our Vice Chair is Danny Sauter. Welcome, everyone. The clerk today is Amy Sayoung. I'd also like to acknowledge Jaime Echeverri at SFGov TV for staffing this meeting. Madam Clerk, please call the roll and make your announcements.
Commissioner Chan? Commissioner Chan? Chan absent. Commissioner Chin? Chin present. Commissioner Dorsey? Dorsey present. Commissioner Ingordio? Ingordio present. Commissioner Fielder? Fielder absent. Commissioner Mahmood? Mahmood present. Commissioner Mandelman? Mandelman present. Chair Melgar?
Present.
Melgar present. Vice Chair Sauter? Sauter present. Commissioner Cheryl? Cheryl present. Commissioner Walton? Walton present. Chair, we have quorum. For members of the public interested in participating in this meeting, we welcome your attendance here in person in the Legislative Chamber, Room 250 in City Hall, or you may watch cable channel 26 or 99 or stream the meeting live at sfgovtv.org. For those wishing to make public comment remotely, the best way to do so is by dialing 415-655-0001 and when prompted, entering access code 2486-838-6981. Apologies, just a moment. Code password 6423 to request to speak, press star 3. To unmute for public comment, press star 6. When the system says your line is unmuted, the live operator will advise you that you will be allowed 2 minutes to speak. When your 2 minutes are up, we will move on to the next caller. Calls will be taken in the order in which they are received. Best practices are to speak slowly, clearly, and turn down the volume of any televisions or radios around you. Public comment for items on this agenda will be taken first from members of the public in attendance in the Legislative Chamber and then afterwards from the remote speakers queue on the telephone line. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Clerk. At this time, I'd like to excuse Commissioners Fielder and Chan from the meeting. Before calling the next item, as Chair, I'd like to invoke Rule 3.26 from the Rules of Order to limit total public comment per item to 30 minutes for today's meeting. Each speaker will have 2 minutes to speak on any given item. Madam Clerk, please call the next item.
Item 2, approve the minutes of the May 20th, 2025 meeting. This is an action item.
Okay, I don't see anyone on the roster. Let's go to public comment on this item, please, Madam Clerk.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item 2? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
There is no remote public comment for this item.
Great. Public comment is now closed. Colleagues, may I have a motion to approve the minutes, please, by Dorsey, seconded by Mandelman. Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
On the motion to approve item 2, Commissioner Chan. Commissioner Chin. Chin, aye. Commissioner Dorsey.
Aye.
Dorsey, aye. Commissioner Ingordio.
Aye.
Ingordio, aye. Commissioner Mahmood. Mahmood, aye. Commissioner Mandelman.
Aye.
Mandelman, aye. Chair Melgar.
Aye.
Melgar, aye. Vice Chair Sauter.
Aye.
Sauter, aye. Commissioner Cheryl.
Aye.
Cheryl, aye. Commissioner Walton. Walton, aye. There are 9 ayes. The minutes are approved.
Thank you so much, Madam Clerk. Let's go to item number 3, please.
Item 3, Community Advisory Committee Report. This is an information item.
Okay, we have CAC Chair Kat Siegel joining us remotely today. Welcome.
Hi, good morning, Chair, Vice Chair, and Commissioners. At our May meeting, the CAC voted to adopt the proposed fiscal year 25-26 budget and work program after a presentation explaining the updates since we first considered the budget in April, primarily the EPA's termination of the $20 million grant to TIMA. Members' main concerns were about how exposed the TA is to risk associated with uncertainty about federal grants. The CAC also voted to support the proposed 20-year lease at 1455 Market Street, with questions and suggestions from some members about ways to more flexibly and creatively use office space in light of city budget concerns. We had a very lengthy discussion about the SFTP 2050 Plus presentation. Feedback to staff included moving away from a downtown-centric transit planning model, improving north-south transit connections, and being mindful of the long-term operational expenses added by new capital projects. Some members suggested that the plan should focus more on how the city's increasingly saturated vehicle network will hinder future growth and the city's housing and development goals, implying a need for better transit not currently reflected in the plan, and noted that the ongoing muni service cuts appeared misaligned with both the previously adopted SFTP 2050 plan and the proposed 2050 plus vision. Lastly, the CAC received an update on SFMTA's muni metro core capacity planning study, with members generally expressing support for improving maintenance and modernization of both physical and digital rail infrastructure, and encouraging the team to consider route restructuring and international benchmarks for successful surface rail systems. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, I don't see anyone on the roster for questions. Thank you so much, CAC Chair Siegel. Let's go to public comment on this item, please, Madam Clerk.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item 3? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
There is no remote public comment.
Okay. Public comment on this item is closed. Let's go to item number 4, please, Madam Clerk.
Item 4, state and federal legislative update. This is an information item.
Okay, we have Amber Crabb here to present on state and federal legislation. Welcome. Good morning.
Great. Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. So at the state level, last Friday was the day for legislature to pass bills out of the House of Origin. And we're not recommending any new positions this month, but of the 6 bills that we do have positions on or have on our watch list, 5 of them did make the deadline to get out of the House of Origin. So the one that did not is Assembly Bill 939, which was the $20 billion statewide transportation bond, and that now is a 2-year bill, so it can be taken up next year. With regard to the state budget, that's been the focus of this week and probably for the next of the month, the rest of the month. We did hear late breaking news yesterday that the Senate and Assembly leadership announced agreement on their proposal. It would, among other things, restore the $1.1 billion that the governor's May revise had proposed to cut from existing transit commitments, both for capital and operations. And so it also includes a new proposal to make a total of $750 million available in long-term loans to Bay Area transit operators, specifically BART, Muni, Caltrain, and AC Transit, and that would be meant to, in the near term, help address fiscal cliff. So with respect to the cap and trade program, the governor's May revise did include a 15-year extension of the program, but it would have significantly reduced the amount of funding available for transportation. So the legislature's proposal would redirect a small amount of funding from cap and trade, but much less than the governor had proposed. So in the legislature's proposal, they did delay the larger consideration of cap and trade to be part of a trailer bill later in the summer. So the governor has until July 1st to sign a final budget, and we'll continue working with our state delegation, the mayor's office, and SFMTA to further provide input. So while the state budget proposal may provide near-term relief for Bay Area transit operators, the long-term solution is still needed to address the fiscal cliff. To that effect, work continues on to advance Senate Bill 63, which is Senator Wiener and Ergin's bill to authorize a regional transportation revenue measure. The Transportation Authority currently has a support position on this, and it did pass out of the Assembly. We expect significant amendments to happen in the Assembly in the coming month. And that will be informed by the ongoing work of a 5-county working group that is working to develop a responsibility and implementation plan. And the Transportation Authority does represent San Francisco on that body. So finally, we're continuing to engage with SFMTA, the mayor's office, and our federal representatives on providing input into autonomous vehicle rulemaking, both at the federal and the state level. Last week, Executive Director Chang spoke at a national summit on autonomous vehicle leadership, and that was on Capitol Hill in DC, and she provided testimony on key elements needed in the new autonomous vehicle framework that's being discussed at the federal level. Yesterday, we also submitted comments to the California DMV on their new proposed regulations. So main advocacy points we're focusing on includes, first of all, sharing San Francisco's experience as kind of the locus of deployment within the country. Secondly, emphasizing the importance of data to ensure robust performance monitoring and accountability of this new technology. And then finally, preventing preemption of state and local regulation and oversight. So with that, I'll conclude my remarks, and this is an information item, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, I don't see anyone on the roster with questions. Ms. Crabb, I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about what we are facing with the change in the cap and trade program?
Yes, cap and trade raises about $4 billion a year over the last few years, and about 40% of that goes to transportation. The governor's proposal would redirect up to $1.9 billion of that, so, you know, 40 to 50% of it to CAL FIRE, to the general fund, so leaving a much smaller portion, and of that, an extra $1 billion would go to high-speed rails, so leaving a much smaller pie for transit capital investments, as well as the portion that goes to directly by formula to transit operators for transit operations. So what the legislature's proposal, and we're still analyzing the details since it came out yesterday, would redirect $500 million this year and next year to the general fund, but then leave the remainder up for negotiation as part of the trailer bill process.
Thank you. And even though it's this year's budget, what you are describing has repercussions for the next 30 years, right?
Correct. Yeah, the governor's proposal would actually start this fiscal year, so it would also impact all of the existing commitments through 2030 when the current cap and trade program expires.
Okay. Thank you so much, Ms. Crabb. I don't see any other questions from my colleagues. Madam Clerk, let's go to public comment on this item.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item 4?
We do have a card from Alita Dupree. Welcome, Ms. Dupree.
Your 2 minutes begins now.
Thank you to the chair, Alita Dupree. For the record, she and her with Team Folds. I'm generally in alignment with your matrix. It's quite a small matrix, but I support rules that say that you can't be going out and covering license plates. When you operate a vehicle on a highway, it has to be identifiable. I had cars once, and I always made sure my license plates were visible. And that was back in the days when you had front and rear license plates. Funding is essential. We have to advocate to get that funding for transit. I like high-speed rail. I rode the Acela Express up in the Northeast Corridor. But high-speed rail right now is a train to nowhere. We haven't even started tunneling through the mountains to get to the cities. So high-speed rail is still probably at least a decade and a half away. That's if we started tunneling now. But how do we get our funding certainty? I'm very concerned about the budget. I don't know how well the state is doing. It was one year we had a huge surplus of money. I don't know if it was ever put in a rainy day fund. I'd call myself an expert on California budgeting. But we need money for our Muni and our BART and all these other systems here. And how do we make the statewide case for it in our legislative mandate to serve the people? And not just here in San Francisco, but this is an issue of state and national significance. Because in New York, if the subway stops, the city stops. So we can't let our transportation here stop. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dupree.
Is there anyone else in chamber who would like to make a public comment? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
There is no remote public comment for this item.
Okay, public comment is now closed. Let's go to item number 5, please, Madam Clerk.
Item 5, adopt the proposed fiscal year 2025-26 budget and work program. This is an action item.
Thank you. We welcome Lily Yu.
Thank you. SFGov TV, I'm presenting my slides. Good morning, Chair Melgar and Commissioners. Lily Yu, Finance Manager. Today I'm here to present our proposed annual budget and work program for fiscal year 2025-2026. Last month, Executive Director Chang and I presented the preliminary fiscal year 25-26 budget and work program as an information item. Today is the second look, and we are seeking approval for the adoption of the budget and work program. Today's meeting will also serve as the official public hearing prior to final consideration at the June 24th board meeting. Since we presented the item last month, we've made two changes to the proposed budget. The first item is to our Treasure Island Mobility Management Program, or TIMA. We are recommending a decrease of revenues by $6 million and decrease our expenditures by $6 million. Just a few days after we prepared our preliminary budget, we received a termination notice for our $20 million community change grant from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, which was awarded to TIMA late last calendar year. We had planned to use grant funds for various transportation improvement projects on Treasure Island. The Transportation Authority Board also sits on the TIMA board, and the TIMA work program for fiscal year 25-26 will be subject to approval by the TIMA committee and board in June. And that budget will be limited to activities supported by secured funding. In addition, we are proposing to increase our traffic congestion mitigation tax program revenue estimates by $1 million from $8.8 million to $9.8 million to align with new revenue estimates received from the Comptroller's Office. As a result of these changes, we are anticipating total revenues of $191.5 million, total expenditures of $242.2 million, and the need to borrow $110 million from our revolving credit agreement with U.S. Bank. As mentioned before, anytime we do borrow funds, we'll come back and seek board approval on how we plan to use those funds. Assembly Bill 2561 now requires public agencies to present the status of vacancies, recruitment, and retention efforts at a public hearing at least once a fiscal year. Our fiscal year 25-26 budget reflects a budget of 44 full-time positions, and there are three vacant positions not included in the budget: a senior transportation modeler, a TIMA program manager, and a TIMA systems manager. These positions will be filled upon securing sufficient funding and will be included in future budget amendments or annual budget. In terms of retention efforts, we anticipate conducting a comprehensive review of our job descriptions, compensation, and benefits this fiscal year. This review is performed every few years to optimize personnel recruiting and retention of our staff, to compensate employees fairly, and remain competitive with similar agencies. Our personnel manual also calls for a periodic review of our job classification structures. Any changes to personnel expenditures as a result of the review will be reflected in future year budget amendments or annual budget processes. This concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions or go through our full budget presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Yu. I don't see anyone on the roster. I did have a question for you, seeing the adjustment for the TIMA budget, you know, after losing part of the grants from the EPA. So, you know, our mayor put aside in his budget a few million dollars in contingency in case we saw that. And I'm wondering if we are thinking of the same or doing, or you see a need for it, if there are any risks of other federal grants that we may, that may, you know, be interrupted because of the current situation with the federal government.
Sure. Thank you for that question. At this time, our budget includes all secured and committed funding from our partnering agencies, our federal and state grant agencies. Should there be any changes or future terminations, we'll come back to the board and amend our budgets.
Okay, but we haven't, you know, sequestered money just in case.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. All right, I don't see any other questions from my colleagues, so let's go to public comment on this item, please.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item 5? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
There is no remote public comment for item 5.
Okay, public comment is now closed. Colleagues, may I have a motion in a second to approve this item, please? Moved by Sauter, seconded by Mandelman. I think we can take the same house, same call, Madam Clerk? Yes. So we'll take the same house, same call. Let's go to item number 6, please.
Item 6, approve and authorize the executive director to execute a 20-year lease with 2 5-year options to extend with the City and County of San Francisco's Real Estate Department for office space located at 1455 Market Street in an amount not to exceed $1,126,597 for the first year, plus operating and other lease-related expenses and annual 3% rent increases, and to negotiate lease payment terms and non-material terms and conditions. This is an action item.
Thank you. Welcome, Ms. Fong.
Yes, thank you for the introductions. Cynthia Fong, Deputy Director for Finance and Administration. What I have before you today are two related items you've also have heard at the BOS meetings. Our office is located on the 22nd floor of 1455 Market Street. We are near the end of the term of our 13-year lease, which expires on June 30th, 2025. We are currently paying $40 per square foot. Approximately 3 years ago, we began working with realtors to negotiate our current lease and to consider moving offices to other offices near City Hall and the Financial District. We had received multiple offers over the years for comparative office space between the rates of $55 to $66, with the $66 offer from our current landlord. At the same time, the city was entering into a lease with 1455 Market Street as well, and moving several departments into the space as of last year. On May 2nd, 2025, through resolution number 194-25, the BOS exercised another option to move additional city departments into the building. This also included a notation that the TA would also be have the option to move into the office we currently reside on and remain there for the next 20 years at a rate of 3% higher than we are currently paying. This is quite a reasonable offer for us. This is the most advantageous and cost-effective for our agency. As I may have mentioned, that the rate the city is offering is $41.20, and I had received an offer of $66 from the current landlord. We also would not have to incur any one-time typical moving-related costs for relocation and tenant improvements. In terms of fiscal impacts, we would pay the cost of the lease with Prop L funds. This has already been included in our fiscal year 25-26 budget, and we would also include sufficient funds in future budgets as well. With that, I'm happy to take any questions you may have.
I don't see anyone on the roster. I just want to say thank you, Ms. Fong. This is really good for the agency. I also am grateful to our Director of Real Estate, Adrico Penick, for all the work to make sure that we end up better off financially and that people have a place to work. That's great. So I don't see anyone on the roster. Let's go to public comment on this item, Madam Clerk.
Oh, is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item 6? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
There is no remote public comment for this item.
Okay, public comment is now closed. Colleagues, this is an action item. May I have a motion and a second to approve this? Motion moved by Mandelman, seconded by Walton. And I think we can take the same house, same call. Okay. Let's go now to item number 7, please.
Item 7, SFMTA Muni Metro Core Capacity Planning Study Update. This is an information item.
Okay, we have our own Jesse Kohler here, as well as Liz Brizen from the MTA to present. Welcome.
Good morning, Chair Melgar and Commissioners. Jesse Kohler, Rail Program Manager with the Transportation Authority. I will briefly introduce this item and then turn the podium over to SFMTA staff. The Muni Metro Core Capacity Planning Study was funded by an allocation of Transportation Authority sales tax funds in conjunction with a Caltrans planning grant successfully obtained by SFMTA. As a condition of the allocation of Prop K funds to SFMTA for the study, the board required that SFMTA make a presentation to the board following the completion of the first phase of the study's work. The board also directed that TA staff conduct enhanced oversight of the study, and the board appropriated funds for this purpose. Consistent with this direction, we are actively participating in the study team, reviewing deliverables, and providing ongoing technical and strategic input. I do want to recognize my colleague Dan Tischler, Principal Modeler, who's been leading this work on our behalf. Finally, I want to note, as Ms. Bryson will elaborate, the importance of this work to this agency. The Prop L expenditure plan includes a significant category of sales tax funding intended to leverage a future federal core capacity grant. And while the federal funding environment presently is laden with uncertainty, now is the appropriate and important time to prepare a strong local program that would be ready to move forward in the future in approximately the 4 to 5 year timeframe. With that, I will welcome Ms. Bryson to present the study update.
Good morning, Ms. Bryson. Good to see you.
Good morning, Chair Melgar and Commissioners. Liz Bryson, I'm a planning manager at the SFMTA and project manager for this study, and also SFCTA staff alumni from 2016. just a little bit of an overview of why we're doing this study. The main problems that we're trying to address is that the Muni Metro rail system is both experiencing aging pains with significant old infrastructure that is at or beyond its useful life. And at the same time, we're also experiencing growing pains. Our system is less crowded than it was pre-pandemic, but we are seeing crowding in some portions of the system today, and we do have more growth planned in the future. So the opportunity through this study is to develop a capital program to both expand system capacity and address state of good repair over the next 10 to 15 years so that we can apply for an FTA core capacity grant. I'll tell you a little bit more about that grant. It's a federal program that's specifically for fixed guideway systems that will experience overcrowding within the next 10 years, and a large portion of our system already meets that threshold. It can fund up to 80% of the project cost, and some recent grants that other transit agencies have received have topped $1 billion. And it's really a perfect grant program for a system like ours that both has old infrastructure in need of replacement and needs to expand capacity at the same time. Of course, there's a lot of uncertainty in the federal environment at the moment, but given that we're seeking to receive a grant like this more than 4 years out in the future, and historically the funding that goes into this program has had bipartisan support, we do think it's still a good time to be pursuing the study. And just a little bit more on why now. I know Mr. Kohler mentioned some of this in his introduction, but the reason we're pursuing this grant, even though the current context is sort of difficult, obviously we've been talking a lot almost about to implement service cuts for the Muni system. Why are we thinking about growth and future ridership right now? The reason really is that the stakes are so high in terms of how much money we may be able to pull down and how long it takes to get through this particular grant program, where the amount of time it takes from when you enter the pipeline to when you receive a construction grant can be in the 4 to 6 year timeframe on average. We have some segments of our system that are overdue for major renewal. One example of that is the NJUDA, which we do know we need to do a full re-railing of in the 2030s. And that is just an example of a project that is currently unfunded, but is a really good opportunity to combine that state of good repair work along with capacity enhancing infrastructure. So once we complete this study, we would then take the initial steps to enter the grant pipeline and position ourselves to receive a grant sometime in the 2030s. I do think it's helpful to do just a little bit of context setting of the past, because Muni Metro does have a pretty unusual history. We're one of just a handful of systems in the country that have rail infrastructure that dates back to the first era of urban streetcars over 100 years ago. And then in the 70s, when BART built BART, they also built the Market Street subway that we operate our trains under. Both of these generations of investments have left legacies of what infrastructure is on the street right now, and we need to be mindful of that as we plan what is the right future for the system. Okay, so a little bit about Muni Metro today. We're currently carrying about 100,000 daily riders, which makes us the fourth busiest light rail system in the country. One of the things we like to champion a lot at the agency is that we've made a really significant improvement in reducing subway delays since the pandemic, with delays down by about two-thirds. Part of that is due to some of the innovative maintenance practices we've taken on, like our Fix-It Week nighttime infrastructure maintenance work. But part of that is also because we're not operating quite as much service as we were before the pandemic. And as we look to the future and know our ridership is likely to grow again, we don't want to return to that level of subway delay, but we do know we're going to need to increase service frequency in the future. Okay, a little bit more on recent trends with ridership. The Muni Metro rail system is about 70%, about 60% recovered from pre-pandemic levels. So we are trailing the overall Muni system, which is more in the 70% range. A very likely explanation of that is related to Muni Metro's orientation to downtown. If you look on the Green Line, you can see that our boardings at the Embarcadero and Montgomery stations are less than 40% of pre-pandemic levels, given the ongoing trend towards hybrid work. But even still, we are experiencing crowding in some portions of our system right now. The photo on the right is from the NJUDA line last fall, Van Ness Station during the outbound peak period, and I certainly personally know a lot of NJUDA riders that experience this on a regular basis. And then we throw in the context of the future. The future is uncertain, but we are preparing for more growth and more ridership. I'm sure everyone here knows that in 2023, the city approved a housing plan to add over 82,000 units of housing for 150,000 people. The map on the right shows both where there's existing capacity for that housing to go in the black circled areas, as well as where proposed rezoning is currently under consideration through the planning department's proposal. A lot of this growth is within close proximity to Muni Metro, and we want Muni Metro to be able to accommodate any sort of new transit ridership that is generated by this growth. Now, just a little bit about the process we've been following for this study. We started by doing a preliminary assessment of a wide variety of different potential capacity-enhancing solutions. And then because a lot of strategies have some overlap or synergy with other strategies, we've then mixed and matched them into different packages that we are now evaluating. We're just about done with evaluation, and we'll be releasing some draft recommendations for public feedback later this summer. And those recommendations will have two sort of categories to them. The first would be what we want to put into our core capacity grant program in the 10 to 15 year timeframe. And then the other category, sort of other recommendations for our longer term future that may be necessary but don't need to move forward in a capital program at this time. This summarizes the main strategies that we're studying. The first two are kind of the bread and butter of transit priority that the SFMTA has made improvements like these around the city through the Muni Forward program, such as transit lanes, signal priority, and other transit priority upgrades. A lot of our system already has these improvements in place, but not every segment of the Muni Metro system does. And because these strategies allow our trains to be more likely to stay on time, get to the subway entrances on time, it can ensure that we make the most of the capacity in the subway, which is where we have our sort of pinch point of everything coming together. Another big component of the work would be capacity enhancing state of good repair work. So I alluded to this a little bit earlier in my remarks, but SFMTA has a significant backlog of very important infrastructure work needed for the Muni Metro system. Our most recent state of good repair works found that we needed something like $400 million annually to invest to just retain our transit critical assets. And what we're doing as a part of this study is identifying which of the state of good repair work has some connection to capacity and therefore could be paired into a grant like this. One specific example of that is, we use traction power to power the trains. If we have a traction power substation that is old and in need of replacement, it's a great opportunity to rebuild one that has extra power so we could potentially power, say, a three-car train or trains at greater frequency. The next strategy we're studying is three-car trains, specifically studying this for the N Judah and inner portions of the M Ocean View line between SF State and downtown. The math on this one is pretty simple. If you take a two-car train and you upgrade it to three-car, each train is now providing 50% more capacity. We're also looking at modern accessible stops. Something like half of Muni Metro stops are not accessible even at one door right now, which improving accessibility is its own important goal, but there is also a complement to capacity in that providing level boarding at each door or even at one door makes trains more reliable, which also helps with the connection to capacity. The final strategy we're studying is route restructuring, and because it is a controversial strategy, I made a whole slide about it. So I do want to be clear, at the end of the study, we're not going to make any decisions about whether or to restructure any lines. Our real focus with this study is primarily on defining a future capital program, while route restructuring is largely an operational strategy, but has some synergy with some of the capital strategies we're studying. So what we are doing with the study is laying out the benefits and impacts of different route restructuring options, and then we would only further explore route restructuring in the future if we experience significant ridership increases or significant subway performance declines, and any work in this area would include extensive community outreach. Speaking of outreach, we have done what I would consider pretty good outreach for a long-range and system-wide study. We formed a community working group that includes representatives of a wide variety of Muni Metro stakeholders, including regular riders of all the lines, as well as businesses and organizations located along the different Muni Metro lines. And they've really been a helpful thought partner for us as we've worked through this study. We also held four Muni Metro rider focus groups last fall in English, Chinese, and Spanish that allowed us to get a lot of rider feedback and reactions to the different strategies that we're studying. And then we're working towards this milestone in the later summer to put out draft recommendations that everyone will be invited to provide feedback on before we finalize those recommendations. And then another important point to note is that at the end of the study, we may be coming up with specific projects we think should be advanced, but we're not approving any projects. So any projects that are suggested would then go through the more traditional type of public outreach where you try to reach everyone in a corridor to get their input on design details. This gives a summary of some of the key feedback that we're working on incorporating into our study's recommendations. I won't read them all for you, but I'll just give you one example of one that I feel like has been really helpful in shaping the direction of the study. And that is that in the initial sort of approach to the study, we were doing all of our planning around a single ridership forecast that assumed that our housing element built out in the timeframe imagined and assumed that we were going to get back to our pre-pandemic ridership trajectory. And instead, people said, oh, that's sort of like a doomsday future scenario. let's be a little more nuanced. And so what we've ended up doing is we've developed three different possible trend lines of low, medium, and high, and looking at both a 10 to 15 year horizon and a 25 year horizon. And that helps us really understand which strategies do we really think we need to move forward with, even if we're in this sort of lower medium category, versus which maybe we'll have to do, but it's hypothetical enough. Let's not worry too much about the details, and we can cross that bridge later without getting people concerned about things that are hypothetical. Wrapping up here, this shows our study timeline. We're working towards that yellow star where we release the draft recommendations for feedback. We'd then be going to the SFMTA board to have them approve the final report sometime in the fall. And then after that, we'd move through the next steps of entering the pipeline for this project. That concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Supervisor Engardio. Commissioner Engardio, sorry.
Thank you for the presentation. So the MTA's fiscal year 25-29 capital program identified over $30 million in funding for the NJUDA Transit Priority Project, but this presentation says it's unfunded. So I just want to clarify what is funded and what is not funded.
Great question. My understanding is it is not fully funded, but I don't know the details of how much the $30 million is versus, I don't think the full cost of it has been estimated, but I could certainly get you the details and email you that.
Great, thanks.
Thank you. Commissioner Sauter.
Thank you, Chair. Just to clarify, this is the scope here, you're looking at existing lines and capacity, no extensions, no further construction. Is that accurate?
Not in this study.
Okay, yes. And are you anticipating kind of a collection of different lines that you're looking at, or are you anticipating focusing in on one particular line?
Yeah, more to be released later this summer, but we're likely to focus on a few portions of the system where the capacity needs are greatest and where we can best sync up with where there's capacity-enhancing state of good repair work that is needed.
Okay. And what is, for this program, what is the typical amount of funding been in the past?
Yeah, so this program is relatively new. There's only, maybe four or five agencies that have received this grant. I put in the slide BART and Chicago. Both were around $1 billion. I know Boston has come in, and their ask is significantly larger than that. $1 billion feels like a lot of money for us.
Well, I appreciate your work on this. As was noted, it is definitely, it might feel counterintuitive or unproductive to work on this now, given the state of things. But I think let's be prepared. Let's do the work. And when things get better federally, when the funding picture gets better, we'll be ready. And in particular, I really appreciate and hope there'll be a lot of focus on the transit lanes and the priority of signaling. I think we all certainly experience pinch points in the system or slowdowns that are so frustrating. And so I think to the extent that this can help alleviate that, I would applaud this work. So thank you for doing this.
Thank you, Commissioner Sauter. Ms. Bryson, thank you for the presentation. Really excellent. I do have a couple questions. Before I do, I have to say that I had the opportunity to go into the tunnel at midnight during Fix-It Week, and it was awesome. If you haven't done it, I would highly recommend that you do. You have to wait till next year. But it is fascinating to see the 100-year-old infrastructure alongside with the last week infrastructure, the sort of new Wi-Fi equipment that we have, and all of the things that we have to do to make things work. And it takes a lot of work to maintain it. So thank you to MTA staff for all that. So my questions were a little bit following off of what both Commissioners Engardio and Sauter asked. I don't quite understand what the relationship is between this planning process and the capital plan and sort of like the need to funding relationship going forward. And then, you know, I was interested in your comments on route restructuring, because I think that, you know, the public sometimes gets upset if you change, you know, the bus or consolidate lines or change a bus stop. I've never heard anyone get upset over more service. So we've talked a lot about like 29R and, you know, a lot of the sort of northwest, north-south on the west side, connections, more frequency. And as you noted, we are rezoning a lot of the west side. And so eventually we may think about expansion. So I was wondering if you could talk about that in this context, if, you noted it, but didn't really talk about route restructuring in that context. It was more about efficiency.
Sure. Okay, so to your first question, SFMTA does a capital plan and updates it at regular intervals, and also has like a five-year financially constrained subset of that. That is largely like a regular collecting of all the information we know about how much different things would cost, and then strategically deciding what's the best way to prioritize our funding. I would say the value out of this study is it is, you know, doing technical analysis to understand, you know, are all the plans we have on the books enough to solve this problem, or are there different things we could do, or are there more efficient things we could do? And given this interconnection with state of good repair work, we certainly are working with like what that document already says our state of good repair needs are to try to figure out which of these lines could maybe get bundled into a core capacity grant. And to your second question, is just why look at route restructuring when it's controversial? Why not do other types of transit expansion? Is that the question? Yeah. So the first thing to do to serve more demand on Muni Metro is to increase frequencies. We don't know exactly at what point, but there's some theoretical point where you can't put more frequent trains into the subway. When we were in pre-pandemic times, people regularly experienced the delays of trying to schedule more trains than possible. You probably know that our agency is also in the process of moving forward with the train control upgrade project, which is going to modernize our train control system and allow us to put more trains through the system more reliably. But there will be a theoretical limit to that. And at that point, if we want to provide more frequent service, or if we want to provide more capacity in the tunnel, we can't turn the knob of more frequency any further. And so that's when the idea of route restructuring could hypothetically come into play. If you take a line that can only run less large trains, say one or two car, and you swap that space in the tunnel for a three car, then you can provide more capacity. But you know, there are other options, and one of the things we've tried to do in the recommendations that will be released is in any scenario where we maybe would have to do route restructuring, which is only in 2050, is not in the timeframe of the capital program, there's like two options. You could either remove this line from the subway or make these lines longer trains, just to give an example of that.
Yeah, thank you. So that was precisely why I asked the question, because it seemed like you are talking about route restructuring only in the context of efficiency, in terms of, you know, like we can't possibly fit more trains in the tunnel, we can't run more frequent trains because this is what we have. When I was actually asking about expansion in terms of, you know,
like more frequent bus service or new
rail
lines, that kind of thing.
Yes, because we are adding housing on the west side, and we, you know, the our existing system, as you noted, is predicated on bringing people downtown as opposed to going, you know, between the Richmond District and the Sunset, for example, which is where we're adding housing. So is part of what we are looking at in terms of core capacity include, you know, the plans that we have for land use development that seek to bring more people where there's not already core capacity, and if that also affects, you know, whether we need to purchase more buses, whether we need to have more, electrical capacity to plug them in if they're electric, you know, all of those things.
Yeah. So this study is focused specifically on Muni Metro, and in the different ridership forecasting scenarios, it assumes like, you know, variations in whether the whole housing element builds out in the time frame anticipated or if it takes longer. I think that there, you know, given our focus on like a 10 to 15 year capital program, a lot of the like potential future needs that we're like, we can't add more frequency into the subway kind of falls outside that time frame. So I do think the agency should be very involved in conversations about that, because we want to be a good partner in making sure there's enough room on transit for everyone that wants to live in the city. But I think some of that is kind of beyond the scope of this study.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I don't see anyone else on the roster. Thank you so much, Ms. Bryson. Let's go to public comment on this item, please, Madam Clerk.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item 7? There is.
Okay, we have Alita Dupree.
Your 2 minutes begins now.
Thanks again to the chair, Alita Dupree. For the record, she and her with Team Folds. Thank you for the presentation. I do use the Metro sometimes, and I enjoy it. I think there's a lot of good things in here. We're dealing with decisions that were made over 50 years ago. I wish we had built a four-track express line like what you commonly see in New York. Don't know if any of you have gotten to see that in New York in their subway with a capital S. I am interested in the three-car trains. I don't know why we didn't do it in the past when we were very busy. And I think we are going to get our ridership back. And I have spoken often on the train control program, which we need to do because we're still doing train control with floppy disks. That's 1980s technology. Then again, in New York, they're still using 1930s signals on some of the system. So we certainly want to upgrade that. And electricity is essential. Because it takes a lot of electricity to run our trains. Which brings me back to AB 1372, which is kind of a two-year bill. Why we have to find out if we're getting paid for electricity we send back to the grid. I'm sure we send quite a bit of it back. But I remember the days of the overcrowding, especially at West Portal, and seeing times when trains would be going westbound out of West Portal, and you'd see 5 or 6 trains backed up in the tunnel. We don't want to go back there. Thank you for this. We have to see what can we do, given that we only have 2 tracks under Market Street. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Is there anyone else who would like to make public comment in the chambers? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
There is no remote public comment for this item.
Okay, public comment on this item is now closed. Thank you, Ms. Bryson and Mr. Kaler. Let's go to the next item, please, Madam Clerk.
Item 8, Internal Accounting Report, Investment Report, and Debt Expenditure Report for the 9 months ending March 31st, 2025. This is an information item.
Thank you. Cynthia Fong, Deputy Director for Finance and Administration. This will be a quick update of the first 9 months of fiscal year 24-25. As of March 31st, 2025, we have assets totaling to $173.8 million, liabilities totaling to $314 million. We've earned $141.5 million in revenues. We've incurred $117.4 million in expenditures. Overall, revenues are on targets and expenditures are under budget. In terms of our debt compliance, as you may remember, in November 2024, the Transportation Authority entered into a 3-year revolving credit agreement with U.S. Bank for a total of $185 million. As of March 31st, we have drawn down $46 million and have this amount outstanding in loans. We had used the funds to purchase LRVs through the MTA. As for our investment compliance, we have approximately 57% of our investable assets sitting in the city's treasury pool. These investments are in compliance with the California Government Code and our TA-adopted investment policy. This provides sufficient funds to meet expenditure requirements for the next 6 months, in addition with drawdowns from our current revolver. With that, I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fong. I don't see any questions. No one's on the roster. So let's go to public comment on this item.
Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item 8? There is not. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
There is no remote public comment for this item.
Okay, public comment is now closed. Thank you. Let's go to the next item, please, Madam Clerk.
Item 9, introduction of new items. This is an information item.
Okay, I don't see anyone on the roster. No items for introduction. Let's go to the next item, please.
Item 10, public comment. Is there anyone in the chamber who wishes to speak on item 10? There is. Your 2 minutes begins now.
Thanks again to the chair. Alita Dupree for the record, she and her with Team Folds, representing Skirt Folds. As I speak generally, I look for the best public transportation that we can have. I don't have a car. I gave away my car years ago. And I use many different modes. I think they should be complementary rather than competitive. I'm an unashamed user of autonomous vehicles. I have 38 trips in my account, two of which were in Los Angeles. The rest are here. And so that's one of the things that I do. Most of you probably never met me. Most of you don't even know who I am. Well, now you do. I get around to different kinds of meetings. But I speak about this because it's important to me as one who uses public transportation and autonomous vehicles and electrically powered ride shares, because they all help me to get around, because I don't want to drive in San Francisco. I have driven in San Francisco. It's a very long time ago, but I have done so. Don't much remember about it. I drove to a little town called Brisbane, just south of here, not to be confused with the one in Australia. And I'm anticipating the work with Clipper. It's very important. I want us to have an all-Clipper-based system here. We should support that. Clipper 2 is going to be here. Don't know when. We'll find out from MTC. They'll let us know. But I use Clipper. I don't carry any money with me, except if I go to the Pinball Hall of Fame in Las Vegas, then I carry money with me. So thank you for the meeting. Hopefully I'll be back sometime. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your comment. Operator, is there any remote public comment?
There is no remote public comment.
Okay, public comment is now closed. Madam Clerk, let's go to the next item, please.
Item 11, adjournment.
Okay, we're adjourned. Thank you.